You guys ready? I can never tell. I have to check in.
That's the worst. You know, when you're doing like an interview and you're talking, you're thinking that you're taping it and everything, and they go, okay, let's start.
You're like, that was actually that the was 15 minutes of my best stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Good stuff.
All right, well, I'll introduce you. How about that? Okay. Kevin Nealon. I just wrote that. Okay.
Crazy. You're so
talented. All right, I'm going to read it. Here's the thing. So my guest today, I can't even believe I'm interviewing, to be quiet. You're the only person I've been nervous about I'm like, Kevin Nealon.
You see that what I am.
I'm still a little, not as, but it's
nice
definitely
to be able
nervous.
To know that you have that power still to make somebody nervous without holding a gun to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I mean, I am, and some people will come up to me and they'll say that. They'll say, I'm just a little intimidated. And I'm, you know, and I'll say, honey, you're my wife.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on?
I get that too. I know how you feel. We should start a support group for hot spouses.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. If you just joined us, Sarah's talking to me. Do I Sarah?
Kevin Nealon. Sarah, just whatever works. My mom called me Sarah Rose, but you can call me Sarah. You can call me whatever you want because you're Kevin Nealon.
A little accent. Where are you from?
Kentucky.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been to Kentucky?
True or false? I used to go to bluegrass festivals in Kentucky.
True.
Yep.
You know
what do I play?
What do you play? Hold on. The guitar. Nope. Yep.
What else?
Yep. Son of a bitch. I know James Taylor is like one of your idols, which we have a lot in common on the music front. But
What do they do at bluegrass festivals? What kind
they
of?
They play banjo.
Yes. I play the five string.
Are you testing my lineage right now? You want to go?
I don't know anybody else from Kentucky.
You know Muhammad Ali? You guys are pals. Johnny Depp?
Really?
Tom Cruise?
All right, take it easy. Take it easy.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah. You're right. Oh, Bacarama.
Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth.
Barney.
Barney Fife?
Just Barney, the cartoon character originated. Yeah, out of a swamp. Okay, so Kevin Nealon. I'm going to read your bio from your... I literally am sweating underneath these overalls. I shouldn't have worn Carhartts, but it was raining, so
why
I felt
do you think
tough.
You're so nervous?
Because you're
because
a legend?
Because of my book forward?
Because you're a legend? Okay, so Kevin Nealon, first off, just released this book. I exaggerate, right?
I held a prisoner for a long time.
My brushes with fame. It's portraits and stories. I've read the entire book.
Have you really?
I'm flattered. I did read the entire book. And I'm going to read. So for people who don't know who Kevin Nealon is, I guess if you're below 15 years old.
Maybe 20.
Let's say 15. So he's a comedian, author, artist, writer, actor, musician, which I just found out. Producer, director, ping pong aficionado. I wish we had a ping pong table because I would definitely challenge you. Absolutely.
Oh, nice.
I grew up playing
ping pong.
Do
you have one at home?
Absolutely. Not at our home, but in my family home we do. We grew up on ping pong.
We had one in our basement, but there was no room because there's so much crap down there.
Yeah.
So you had about this much space against the table to play.
And the ceilings were here.
Yeah. And if you missed the ball, it was gone.
Yeah.
It was behind boxes and stuff. You couldn't get it.
Why is every ping pong table and basement's the same scenario?
I don't know, but I mean, it's been like that for me forever. Like when I grew up, our garage was always like a mess, everything. Nobody put anything back. And I would clean it up like once or twice a year and it'd be immaculate. And then people would mess it up again. And to this day, we have stuff in our garage.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife puts everything in the garage that she doesn't want.
Yeah.
It was in the garage. I said, don't just throw it in the garage. Put it, stack it nicely. Because
yeah.
I have this PST about... you know, messy garages and basements.
Because you grew up with a messy garage and you lost all your ping pong balls.
Yeah.
So that's your PTSD. From, so does
she... What do I call it, PTSD?
PTSD.
PTSD.
Is that right?
That's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Do you have PMS?
I have STD.
I have ADD and ADDHD. Which one do you have?
Is that an oil?
Huh? Okay, so, and then... So Kevin was a cast member for Nine Seasons on Saturday Night Live. Amazing. I actually auditioned for Saturday Night Live,
did
too.
Really?
We have something in common.
How was that?
Yeah. It wasn't like everybody's that I saw. I actually auditioned in a comedy club.
So that was the pre-audition before Lauren, or?
I don't know. It couldn't have been because the girl that I auditioned with, there was five girls there, and one of the girls, Michaela Watkins, was at the same audition, and she got it.
And she's on it now?
Half a season, no.
Oh, she lasted half a season.
Half a season.
That's a hard show to stay with, especially if you're a woman.
I've heard that. I've heard, and people actually were like, you don't want to work on SNL. You don't want to. But actually, I really did. And I was working at a bakery after Michaela Watkins got that, and she came in while I was working behind the counter. I was like, do you want vanilla or chocolate?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, I was on with Nora Dunn, Victoria Jackson, and Jan Hooks.
Yeah.
Our cast was like 8 people. Now it's like 30 or something.
Yeah.
But Jan Hooks, I was dating at the time. And I'd known her for like 6 years before that. And we dated a year before SNL. And my first year was horrible because she had insane stage fright.
Jan did.
Yeah. And though she was, she's I think, one of the best sketch players on there, along with Kate McKinnon and Kristen Wiig and some of the other ones, you know, I don't want to like... But she was just amazing. If you ever go back and look at some of those tapes, but she had incredible stage fright. And every Friday night, she was panicking. I'd go to her apartment, and I would just rock her. And I would hold her and rock her, tell her it's going to be all right. I didn't really have time to focus on myself and my career there. And then she would go on and she would kill it. And I go, oh, really? I would expect you to be a little more frightened. Spending so much time with you trying to... Maybe it was my time that I spent with you that made you... Okay. Then every week it was the same thing.
Yeah.
Every week.
You know, I read that about too, which I... Again, let's recall. Go back to Kevin's book, I Exaggerate, which everybody should get. One of my favorites. I do have my favorites. I do. Because I never knew this about him. I had an idea. Where is he?
Tell me about myself.
Chris Farley.
Yeah.
One, the drawing is impeccable. It's my favorite drawing. But I used to hear stories, because I do stand up and I did sketch and all that stuff. And I get, it's masochistic, like how insanely scared I get. And even when I get off, I'm like, you're a piece. Like, there's no payoff for me. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, what do you, go, it's not working. You know what I mean? It's not good.
You beat yourself up a lot.
It's not, it's so horrific. That you almost, it's like, why am I doing this? And then Chris, I went to Second City in Chicago.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, to watch or to perform?
Yeah, I went there to perform there.
To be a... Nice.
Yeah, and Stephanie Weir was on main stage. You know Stephanie Weir from MTV? Does that ring up? Yeah, she was on main stage at the time when I was a student there. And I would sell t-shirts in the little ETC theater.
You worked at a bakery, you sold t-shirts.
I've done
you.
A lot of jobs, my friend. And so, but I remember I would always be so terrified, and my teacher at the time, Jonathan Pitts, who knew Chris Farley when he was at, I guess at Second City in Chicago, said that he would get so nervous before going up on stage that he would puke. Like he would get so...
You sure that was nervous or something else?
Or both.
Yeah.
Or both, or he would insane. It could be both. Maybe he said it because we were young and easily influenced, but I don't know. But like, it did help to at least, you know, hear those stories like that and like Jan, that these people come out and kill and you have no idea what goes on before.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, like, yeah, there's a lot of singers that are like that too.
Yeah. And Victoria Jackson, my tie-in with Victoria is that I think I offended her once at Zany's Comedy Club in Chicago. Because I worked there as a hostess, and she performed there. She did a ukulele, and I was so I was like, holy shit. It was like one of my first nights hostessing at Zany's, and she was the headliner. And I was like, Victoria Jackson. And so, and then after she got off, I wanted her autograph, and I didn't. Listen, I was like 20. You know, you're not thinking. You're not the most
What's
sharp.
Wrong with asking for an autograph?
Because I gave her a roll of toilet paper to sign. And she's like, what is this saying? I was like, I just didn't have anything else for you to sign. And so I think she was actually offended because it was, she was like, are you saying I'm shitty? And I was like, is that a joke?
She should
this
have said,
didn't go well.
I would have said this. So do I have to sign every sheet on here? That would have been offensive.
But that what makes you Kevin Nealon and hilarious and quick and witty. But I think she was like, you're an asshole. And I was like, this is going well. Okay. She was like the first legend that I ever met. And I asked her to sign toilet paper.
All right. I thought it was funny.
Thanks, man. So there you go. So that, so there's my own, my tie-in when with SNL. I personally didn't get it, but you did. And I love it that you actually made it. And we're sitting here in the basement of the Comedy Store. So you've done well for yourself.
I have.
Here we
well.
Are.
You know, all I wanted when I moved here to do stand-up comedy, you know, aside from becoming a comic is what I wanted. I wanted to get my name on the Comedy Store. And I never passed the audition, even though I killed.
Yeah.
And I think Mitzi, who owned the place, didn't want me here because I used to be, I was bartending at the Improv.
Yeah.
So she didn't want me performing here. She told me to go out and do other clubs.
Interesting.
And so I never got my name up there. And I never thought it was there until a couple of years ago. Somebody said, hey, your name's on the Comedy Store. I said, really? Where is it? Finally, you know, like 30 years later. But
they didn't tell you they put your name on the wall?
Yeah. Nobody told me.
Can but, you do that? They just do that? They just put your name on the wall and not tell you?
It's like graffiti.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'd like to see mine there tomorrow then. Don't tell me about it though. Okay.
But you know, the great thing was like a couple years later, I got a billboard right across the street from the Comedy Store.
Hilarious.
So take that, Mitzi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you perform here a lot though at the Comedy Store?
I come here a fair amount. I haven't been here lately because I've been on the road a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going on tour like right after this, right?
Well, I have been on an endless tour.
Yeah.
You know, I called it, I gave it a name a while ago because I saw everybody having these tours, you know, and they're naming it. But it only lasts for like 2 months and then they're done. But mine has been like a year and a half. And I keep changing the name of the tour, you know.
What's the name of the tour?
It started off as a Sugar Train Tour because I talk about sugar
in
my act. Yeah.
What about sugar? What's up with the
I'm
sugar?
Addicted to it.
You're addicted to sugar?
Macchiato.
Caramel macchiato and a mocha. Yeah. I was going to ask that, Kevin, do you have, because here's the thing, like you're an artist, musician, an actor, an author, you do so many things.
Ping pong.
You do so many things that I know for like so many people have such an insane dark side to them that do all these things. And I'm like, what's your thing? There's nothing wrong with you. You seem like an even keel, nice.
My wife would be laughing right now if you said
person.
That.
Hi, wife. Tell me everything. My wife would be laughing as well if you said that I was a nice person.
I think that I have ADD because I'm always busy doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been leaving the stove on lately.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I did that the other day.
And Susan, my wife, said she has a fear of fire.
Yeah.
Like she thinks she could get burned. You know, so, but I'm just thinking about other things or I'm busy and there's people come in and I leave it on to go do something and I forget to, you know, I come back.
Yeah.
So there was a week she wouldn't let me use the stove.
Because you left it on.
So I think, I think ADD is my thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of creative people have ADD.
Yeah.
Because they're not focusing on the simple things in life. They're thinking about a painting or a song. Or whatever.
Yeah. But you don't ever like do like do you, you never did drugs or anything? Like you never snorted Ritalin?
No, I've never done coke in my life. I've never I've done some pot, you know, over the years, but nothing. I never bought pot.
Yeah.
You know, like a friend would have one, I'd take maybe a toke, but I was never really into that. But you know, in college and after college I would drink beer and get messed up on the weekends. Yeah. Like even here, and you know, I first got my first apartment, I would be drinking like tequila or Jack Daniels starting on the weekend.
Yeah.
And just for the weekend, fun, have fun, you know? And then that weekend started on Thursday, you know what
okay.
I mean? And then on Monday. And I thought to myself, this is not heading the right direction. And I wasn't like an alcoholic or anything, but I did like to catch a buzz. You know, I liked that feeling, kind of being out a little bit.
Yeah.
But not in a long time. I haven't. I mean, I don't even really drink that much. I have a glass of wine every once in a while.
Yeah.
But that's it.
So would you? So check because you do so many things. Like you have your hiking with Kevin show, right? That's an endorphin rush, which I've watched. Greg Kinnear was amazing.
Really? How do you like him?
Absolutely. Yes. Speaking of, let me transition. I made you something. Okay. I made you a painting.
Oh my God.
I'm insanely embarrassed about it because I did mess up one thing. So I made you, here's why.
I love your artwork so much.
I love yours too. And you paint everybody else. So I was like, I'll just make a painting of him. He paints everybody else in his world. Why don't I paint him? So my style is a little different. And we actually, can I say this? Kevin, I obviously knew who Kevin Nealon was, but I didn't know you did visual painting. I had no idea because we were just talking about this. Our mutual friend Jade, also a comedian, asked me to do a painting of her, and it was during the pandemic. So I was like, sure, man, I got nothing else to do. Like, did this, and I think she posted it. And I think that when I noticed, I think you liked it. And you can even ask Jen. I was like, Kevin Nealon just liked my piece. Kevin Nealon just liked my piece. Like, Kevin Nealon just liked my shit. Like, so I went, and then you had a whole art page, and I was like, what? And it's so good that I was like, this has to be, because the first one I saw was Howard Stern. Hmm. And I was like, that's so good. It has to be, like, digital. It's so seamless. But it's
multimedia.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's sketch.
Okay.
It's some digital.
But you're an amazing sketch artist.
Thank you.
And then... Yeah, so you sketch it, and then you...
And I do some digital on there, and then I do paint.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Is that where the softness comes from, the digital? Like, because it...
It's a little of both. It's a little of the paint, and... But you know, people say that. They say, I didn't know you were talented like this. So thank you.
It's stunning. It does take you to like another, like, that's why I was like, do you do anything? There's so much creative stuff in you that I'm like, well, did something happen? And like, what are you escaping? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I had a very good childhood. My parents were amazing.
Yeah.
You know, my father was just a great guy. Everybody loved him. He was an aeronautical engineer. He was great with, you know, animals, and people loved him. He stopped to talk to people on the street. Yeah. And my mother was, you know, they called them, what do they call them? Not a housewife, but homekeeper, maybe, whatever. Yeah. And she would iron her clothes every day and make breakfast and make these lunches for us that were amazing, like fresh tuna fish on soft bread for lunch and homemade chocolate chip cookies. Everybody else is eating like peanut butter and jelly, and they're like, oh.
I'll trade you, dude.
And then at night I would hear her typing my term papers. Yeah. And then my clothes in the morning. So I was really lucky. I was spoiled.
That's awesome.
But not spoiled enough where when I came out here, I didn't get crappy jobs with a BS in marketing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I feel like when I listen to your story, I've read your story, I've listened to your story.
Now come and listen to a story about a man named Jed.
What if I pulled out a banjo just in my back?
This curtain opens up.
There's coal miners behind. They're like, that'd be fun. We're on a tobacco farm. I just didn't tell you. All the walls fall apart. We're on a farm. Okay. And then I bring in craft services and fried chicken and fucking chitlins.
You have a creative mind, I'll tell you that.
Thank you. Well, so okay, so here you go. I did this.
Oh, I can't wait to
see it. There's one part, you can read the back, but I didn't realize this until I showed it to Jen Rosenstein. And anyway, so it's just...
I'm not going to look at it.
Yeah,
I'm
go
look
for
at
it.
Let them look at it first.
Yeah, so what's happening if you're just listening? He's opened up his painting of his self-portrait of Kevin Nealon, of kind of my interpretation of Kevin Nealon with his...
So on the back, you say to Kevin Nealon,
yeah,
thank you for doing my podcast.
Yes.
I'm sorry I made you look like you have a tail.
Yeah.
It's a dang tail.
It's a dang trail.
Oh,
it's
trail.
Yeah, I have a handwriting of...
Oh, I see.
Fucking...
Okay, and now I'm going to look at it. I can't wait. It feels like glass.
Well, I resined it for you. I don't... Okay, so...
Wow.
So
that is great.
It's just a silly... It's much like what I appreciate about your artwork is it's very... It's fun. It's funny. It's an extension of who you are.
So cool.
So
thank
I put
so
the tail part was supposed to be the trail because you do your show and you're a hiker.
Like
you
that.
Even wore hiking boots to the podcast, which I'm bummed I was going to wear my
which
boots.
I never wear when I'm hiking.
I was.
I don't. I wear sneakers.
They're very uncomfortable when you're actually hiking.
Yeah, it's hard for me to find a pair of pants that fit me. I mean, shoes.
Yeah, pants. I was like, wow, okay. I didn't.
Because my feet are so big. I like the little rubber here you put so it goes on the wall. I like that.
Yeah, so that it's just resin and it's, yeah, so I try to.
I like how I exaggerate goes off the book.
You also have four eyes. I don't know if you noticed that too. So, so a part of it is what I do, what we're going to do at the end of this podcast, which would probably be coming up relatively soon. Uh-huh. So we're going to, it's like what I do in my style. You have your, you know, how you go about your thing, yeah. Right? And that's what, for me, like artistically, creatively, with stand up, with sketch, with, because there's, I have so much angst about it because there's a little bit of a perfectionism, what you're going to think about me. You
you're
know,
so like, hard on yourself. I don't even know you that well.
Very difficult on myself.
And I could tell that you are really, you beat yourself up. Jen, am I right?
It's pretty, no, 100, I admit to it. I'm working on it.
Why, what kind of childhood did you have?
Not good. Oh, I'm sorry. No, my dad's probably listening to this. You did a good job, Dad.
So you did not have a lot of confidence growing up.
I think, I love this is going to turn into a therapy session. Don't feel bad for me. But like, no, I think, yes, I think I grew up in super alcoholic home. My dad, you know what I mean? Like,
do you drink?
I did. I don't, I'm sober.
You think that's a gene?
I have a strong feeling. I have my uncle sober, and then I have a cousin who's sober.
When you say you're sober, does that mean you go to meetings? And
yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah,
that's
that
a real
thing.
Sober thing.
Yeah. I'm pretty dark. Like so, but you wouldn't. But that's what creatively. I that's where all my color comes out. That's where the freedom comes out because of myself.
You're a tortured artist.
I don't want to say torture. I don't.
I said it. You didn't say it.
I wouldn't say torture. But definitely, like it is. I do have to do something to get the let out. You know. Does you know what I mean? So I think the low confidence, which I'm pretty open about, it's getting better. Actually, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, oh, stop it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Like the more you hear yourself, watch yourself, you're like, what are you talking about?
I'm sure there are people that admire you so much, you in stand-up comedy and sketch, and you're an artist.
Yeah.
And they're thinking, oh, I wish I was her, man. I wish I could, you know. So we never see each other in that light that other people see each other. And when you're creative and you're, you want to keep creating and you're never happy with what you do, it's hard to be in your shoes because, you know, you never, no matter how many people come up to you and say, oh, you're amazing. No, well, this isn't what I really, I want to get to the next level. Next level. I want to write a book sometime and call it, then I'll be happy.
Yeah. You know. Oh, I should get that tattoo. Yeah. If ... then I'll be happy.
And I'll be happy. Because that's what you do, really, is I want to get this house. Man, if I get this house, I got the house. But I'm not happy. Still, I'm not happy. Then I'll be happy if I get this job. Then I'll be happy. And then what else, you know?
No, it's true. I don't. I think a lot of people struggle with that, right? Is that like,
especially
like
in this town, I think.
Yes. Yes. So I mean, but what has been better for me, what's calmed that is doing, that's of like, it brings like doing this. It's amazing to me. It's joyful. Like I'm not like, oh, this is terrible. Like it's just my perception or doing stuff like this. If there's a purpose, if there's a, you know, I like to, if it makes people happy, then that makes me happy.
Who influenced you with your paintings?
No one. I can honestly say I didn't grow up with like artists or I didn't grow up with that. Like I grew up with a little bit of culture. We went to a Broadway show, but like I didn't grow up with any influence. Like I didn't look at a book.
So even in later in life, you didn't like see an artist, you go, wow, that's good. I like
Basquiat, for sure.
No?
Basquiat.
Oh, Basquiat.
Yeah, for sure. But I wouldn't say, even I went to, you know, even the little bit of art school or whatever that I went to, like we studied such like art history that I couldn't ever relate. I was like, I don't live in BC. I don't know anybody who's naked who will sit with an apple. Like, you know, like I don't. So I figured I don't relate to it. So I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And you've developed a really, you know, good following. People love your stuff and it's so unique and recognizable. It's really good branding.
I wish I were better at that. But here's, we can't tell you how I found my stuff. Because I was so hard on myself. Because like, if, you know, if I like set out this, I'm going to do a portrait of Kevin Nealon and it's going to be perfect. And I want it to look exactly like him, like realism and stuff. I wouldn't get past your eyebrow because I can't get it right. So what I did is I started the like no look thing. That's what like I just will do it at the end. But that's why you have four eyes and like two arms, because I don't look at it. And there's, so there's no pressure. There's no like there's no pressure to be perfect. So what it is what it, and then I get to create whatever I want. That's why there's no it's there's no pressure to be right. So yeah, that allows
true. There's
me.
No pressure. Nobody can say that's wrong.
That's what I
that's
mean.
That's your artwork.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that you were sitting for however long it was thinking of me and imagining my face. And, you know, I mean, that's flattering. I think people like when you, a lot of people go to psychics. I go to a psychic, not because I necessarily believe what they're saying, but I just like somebody talking about me for like a half hour, you know?
I love it. That's really? Why I put this podcast on with you, so that did hopefully you? We could just stay on me for the entire hour.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's more about me you want to talk about, I'm kidding.
There is actually.
No. Well, that's what. So, can I say the other thing that I really related to in your book when you did the Pointer Sisters? So I read the story. If you get Kevin's book called "I Exaggerate," brushes, my brushes with fame.
What's it look like? What's the cover look like?
It's Kevin.
Oh, that's nice.
It's the same thing I painted. It's Kevin with a paintbrush, right? And then there's
right? letters on there.
There's
yeah,
letters on there that are legible. And but what the reason I love this book is one, the illustrations are captivating and it's all of his artwork and it's there. I can't even look at Howard Stern. Are you F? That was the first one I saw. So then I listened to your Howard Stern radio show interview. And you started out with the sketches on the airplane.
Yeah.
Which again, like, do people, how long does it take you to do these? They're insane.
Those don't take
good.
Me that long. Because I try to do it before the plane lands.
I thought that was Trump when I first saw it.
That's too good looking to be Trump.
Okay. So by the time the plane lands, you've sketched what?
Yeah.
How many people?
Usually just one row.
One row of people?
Yeah, but then I'll come home and I'll like color it or something, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody's ever seen those pictures. I don't show them. Because who wants to see a picture like this?
I do. Those are the most interesting things to me.
I took a picture. Norm Macdonald and I worked in Grand Caymans at a Bonnaroo Festival a couple years ago. And we were on the flight. And Norm was sitting like a row behind me. He wasn't in first class. And and he was sitting and he was sound asleep. He was like this. And I took a picture of him. And then I had somebody take a picture of me kneeling next to him. He was sound asleep. And looking back at that, I didn't know he was sick at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so I never really posted those pictures or showed them. But those are a lot of the poses, though, the people I draw do their sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a lot easier when they were wearing masks, too, because I didn't have to do the nose or the mouth.
You don't like doing facial features because you're really good at it.
I do like doing them now. But, you know, I study a lot of people, too, that other artists. And I mean, they're really good. These guys are professional illustrators, guys and girls, you know. I mean, they like cover Time Magazine, they do. And they all became kind of my mentors.
Yeah.
You know, I just follow them on Instagram and I see their work. And it's just mind-boggling how quick they do it. Hey, I got it. I just did this cover for, whatever. They needed it by tomorrow. And there's like 20 faces in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're like a machine.
I feel like you work pretty fast, though. I saw you did what you were on the Tonight Show. Why can't I think of his name? But you did his. You did Conan. You did a sketch of Conan.
Those are more comedy stuff, though. They were quick.
Like, I know, but they're still so. See, but that's if a normal, like a regular person who doesn't is not an artist draws, and you were like, yeah, that's not that good. Like that. Even to me, I'm not a sketch artist like that. Like it's impressive. Like that to me is quick.
Hmm.
Right. Right? I mean, to me, I don't know. But
well,
like,
I used to end my act with a portrait drawing.
Yeah.
I would have an easel with a big newsprint. Did you ever see that? And I had charcoal.
It's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, and I would just get a woman out of the audience to work as my subject. And I would ask her a lot of silly questions as I'm drawing her. And the audience would see the picture as horrible. And then I'd keep shifting her face, and I had charcoal on my fingers, and she didn't know it. And by the end of the sketch, she had charcoal all over her face. And she thinks the people are laughing at the stupid drawing. And then at the end, I said, "That this doesn't look like you at all. Here's a mirror. Let's just show you." And she looks like, "Oh my God." And the audience goes crazy. So I did that for a while. I used to carry that easel around with me. That was horrible. I finally got tired of that. I said, "I can't carry this prop with me all the time."
So at stand-up shows, you would do that too?
Yeah. Lab? Stand-up shows where I did it.
I did read that you were going to do that on Letterman at one point.
Yeah.
Right?
And that story's in the book.
Stories in the book if you read the book.
That's right.
Get the damn book.
Anywhere where fine books are sold, or fantastic books for that matter.
Yes.
One so time what? I was, let me talk about myself for a second here. One time.
And then back to me.
No, go ahead.
No, you first.
I was just talking about props. I've never really used props. I had a guitar when I started here.
Yeah.
And I was just starting off, and I would do songs like, you know, I go, here's a song I wrote called Surfing in Malibu. Mm-hmm. And I had a guitar. I go, surfing in Malibu, surfing in Malibu. And then I take a glass of water and throw it on the guitar. And then later I'd pick up the guitar and here's a song I wrote while I was in Alaska. Surfing in Alaska. And I throw the ice on the guitar. It was like gong show good.
Did people take it? People liked it?
They laughed, yeah.
Okay. I laughed.
So that was another prop that I had, but the best prop I had only lasted for 3 shows.
Okay.
I went to Buffalo, New York with Bill Maher and Tommy Davidson. This is like, you know, back in the 1900s. And
I wasn't even born yet. Who are they?
You probably weren't. Oh,
I'm
no.
Are they alive still? Or?
I don't know. But okay. We're flying up there. It's a small plane from New York. I was on SNL at the time. And I started feeling like queasy on the way up. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. And it's a big theater outside. And Tommy Davidson goes on. I'm backstage, and I'm about to puke. And there's a cot there. And I lay down on the cot. And it makes me feel better. And then Bill Maher goes on. And I'm like, oh, man, how much longer do I have? I said to the stage manager, can you put the cot on the stage? I might have to do my act from the cot. And so he did. And I just told the audience that I was depressed. And I need to lie down. And they laughed. And I do my whole act from the side, and occasionally I try to get up and I feel bad again. I said, oh, I'm so depressed, I gotta get back down. And they laughed. I thought, this is amazing. I'm gonna bring a cot with me to like every show I do, man. I brought it to 2 and it didn't work as well as the when I was real, you know. So I got rid of the cot.
Oh my God. And what's it like to bomb laying down?
Well,
I'm just gonna,
you know,
stay down here.
They just carry me out on the gurney.
It becomes a stretcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
They put a flower on top of you and sing hymns on the way out. That'd be a dope show.
That would be dope.
Sorry. Well, that's so, like, how,
what
when you go on stage.
What? So, where? Ooh. Ah.
I actually created my own language here. That's how quick I am.
I did a hike with Cheryl Hines. Horror. And she would keep doing this thing, like, I would ask her a question, she'd go, and then I went home and I put, when I asked her and she goes, I put the Led Zeppelin song,
If you're out there with somebody, make a remix of,
I love looking at people's little idiosyncrasy, you know, especially their vocal kind of stuff.
I'm sorry. What I was going to ask, though, was, so that's a thing. So when you go out on the, do you change your act a lot? Like, because audiences now, I would imagine, are different from even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Do you constantly change your act, or are you just like,
I'm constantly trying to change it.
Yeah.
But the problem is when you go on the road,
Nobody's
seen your act.
Good call.
So it's easy not to change it. Yeah. Although I do keep adding stuff to it and keep writing. And I think my act has kind of evolved, you know, from what I was talking about before to...
I actually wish it didn't.
To real life stuff that's happening in my life, where you become like a blues musician as you start digging deeper into it and trying to understand. And your act changes over a period of time. I mean, even vocally, I remember a friend of mine, when I started out, he was doing stand-up too, and then he got a job working on The Simpsons, much better job. And he hadn't seen me in a long time, and he came back and saw me. He goes, wow, you really like sped up your act. Like your voice is much quicker now, because I used to be really laid back.
Yeah.
But then I realized that it's better to kind of pick up the speed a little bit and have that energy.
Yeah.
But then I see people like Tig Notaro. I go,
so good.
Tig could be laid back and just kill still. And I said, maybe I should turn it down a little bit more. Let's go back to the roots.
Yeah. So did you?
No.
Okay. You bring all of your props up. A guitar, stretcher.
Stretcher.
Charcoal and an easel.
Yeah.
Let's bring out the good old. Yeah. Well, John Lovitz, actually, who is our mutual friend, is also... He's doing shows at the Laugh Factory in Vegas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I just saw him. Actually, we were there last year doing shows, and he had
a
heckler. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. Hi, John, if you're listening. He did like some, you know, like a three-night stint there, and then he'll come leave and then do it again. But, yeah, but it was interesting watching him do his, what I say? Is it
hip? You know, you sound a little bit like Victoria Jackson, too. Sometimes.
It's the high pitch.
You don't have the high pitched voice, but you have a certain kind of a mannerism with the way you speak. Because, you know, as comics, we listen to people and we're very observant to their. But I don't know what it is. But, you know, Johnny Carson, a lot of people know this. He had a lisp. Do you know who Johnny Carson is?
Of course I know who Johnny Carson is. I watched your whole clip and you were very nervous and you forgot your lines. And then at the end of the applause, they came to you.
You read that story. That story's in the book.
The story's in the book. I exaggerate my brushes with
fame.
Thank
you for liking me so much.
I don't know. I want to know everything about... I mean, I think people are so interesting. And I think, like I said, the people that are multifaceted and do what you do, it's so fascinating. And the people, Kevin, the people that you know, it's on the Pointer Sister, Tilda Swinton, who... The story that I love the most that I was like, oh man, was the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, yeah.
When you're opening for he opened for the Pointer Sisters, no big deal. And
this is back in the 80s.
Yeah, with the Noisemakers.
Yeah.
I've had that moment. Can you tell that story? It's such an amazing story.
First of all, it's amazing how much you remember from that book.
Yeah.
It's actually also, it's an Audible book, believe it or not.
It's an Audible
book. And they have the pictures on PDFs.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You can get it on Audible, Apple, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So get it where you can listen to Audible books on I Exaggerate by Kevin Nealon. My brushes.
So here's the story about the Pointer Sisters. They were a threesome group, sometimes foursome. They're all sisters. They didn't get along. And I had a job opening for them. I think it was the first time we opened for a band or singers. And it was at Caesars in Lake Tahoe. And I was so excited. I would do 8 minutes before them. The curtain was closed. And when I finished my 8 minutes, I would go split the curtain, go back there, and they'd be on their pedestals with their platform shoes ready to go.
Unbelievable.
And I couldn't see them that well. The stage manager had the flashlight, but they saw me and they would go, hey, Kevin, hey, Kevin, hey, Kevin. They called me Kevin. And and I thought it was like birds in the forest, you know, hey, Kevin, hey, Kevin, Kevin, hey, Kevin. And then I would leave, and then the curtains would open. I hear the huge applause, you know, Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And so I did that for a couple nights, and it was going great. And then it's New Year's Eve, and the stage manager goes, okay, we're going to add another show tonight. And just keep the same as always. Keep the same, whatever you've been doing. Do the same thing. I'm thinking, what's he so worried about? Yeah, of course, no problem. 8 minutes, in and out. Nobody gets hurt. So I go out there. It's the third show now. It's right before midnight. I didn't realize that they gave noisemakers to everybody in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they were half from other countries. And also, they were $20,000 and over losers. So they had a lot of like stuff going on in their head. So about 2 minutes in, I hear, I thought, uh-oh. And then within 2 minutes, the whole room was going, and I must have done maybe 3.5 minutes. And I said, thank you, everybody. And I left in the stage, and there was no Pointer Sisters on their pedestals. The stage manager comes around, what have you done? What have you done? You've put me in a world of trouble. And he's doing the levers, you know, and stuff. You put me in the world of trouble. I'm like, I couldn't do anything. They were all blowing the noise. And then the Pointer Sisters are running down their platform shoes. What happened? What happened? What happened? And I said, they're a great crowd. You're going to love them. You're going to love them. And that was, I think, the last time I opened for them.
How did you, I've had the moment where you had to slither back in between the curtain.
Yeah, just back away.
When I read that story, I was like, man, I 100% have had that moment, not with the Pointer Sisters, but like where I had to slither in between, back in between the curtains when you couldn't find the crease almost, and then slither out of the audience and make no eye contact, and then hope to God you crash into a wall.
How long have you been doing stand-up comedy?
I just laughed at my own story. He had to be there.
No, I get it. I totally get it. And I'm just glad it wasn't just me.
It's so horrific, that feeling.
It is horrific.
It's horrific when you have somebody looking at you, like, you have 5 more minutes. What are you doing? Get back out there. You're like, go fuck it. You get back out there.
You get back out there. I know you're not doing stand-up, but get back out there anyway. I've learned things over the years. I used to wait in line with the people outside before they knew me.
Yeah.
And I would say, who's on tonight? And they go, we don't know.
Yeah.
And then I learned sometimes the green room didn't have a bathroom.
Yeah.
So as a younger comic, you go use the public bathroom with everybody else. And I would go in there after my show and then people would start coming in and you don't want to hear what they're saying.
It's the worst.
I was disappointed in that guy, man. The opener was great though, right? The opener was great. I'm like,
It's my worst nightmare. Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Neal, I didn't know you were in there. Hey, sign this toilet paper roll, will you?
Okay, you brought it all back. Call back. You are a pro. That was a pro move.
Circular. It's circular.
I won't even go into a bathroom after performed if there's like with the audience.
Oh, no. I don't even go outside in the lobby anymore after a show.
You don't? You don't do meet and greets afterwards? What about with your book, I Exaggerate, My Brushes with Fame by Kevin Nealon? What about that? Because you're going on a tour. You just did this book. You won't go out. You're not going to do like book signings?
You ever do an interview with the radio guy? They're not called a DJ or the personality, whatever they're called. They're talking to you, and then they'll say your whole name because people just joining.
Yeah.
So listen, that's really interesting, Sarah Rose Hyland. So you, I had DVDs that I go out there and sell them. Or I had another book about 16 years ago I'd written. Or whatever, and I'd be out there. I only sell stuff like when I come out with a special or something. And I realize it's not worth the effort, the amount you make. Mm-hmm. I'm not like Gabriel Iglesias or Tom Segura where they have all this merchandise, where they make more in merchandise than they do in the gig.
Yeah.
You know, they got people working for them and they
so
got dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm out there with a DVD and maybe a fourth of those people will buy a DVD. The rest want a picture, selfie, and they want to grab your ass. So I thought, this isn't really worth it for me. You know, I'll just tell them about the DVD on stage.
Yeah.
But with the book, I haven't really, it's so new, I haven't really had the opportunity yet. I was in Aspen a couple of weeks ago at the Wheeler Opera House, and the bookstore came, and they had like 100 books there. So afterwards, I went out and I signed those. But it was orderly. They had a long line.
Yeah.
But but also I don't own this book.
You don't own the book?
No.
Who owns the book?
I own like 10 books that I bought. It's owned by the publishers. So if I sell the book, I'm just paying for what I paid for it.
Everybody buy the damn book so Kevin Nealon makes money. Because he's not making any on this podcast. But I did get you a caramel macchiato. All right, here's what we're going to do, Kevin.
Okay.
All right. And speaking of, so while we do this, I'm going to do another story because you just brought it to my attention of grabbing asses. One of my other favorite stories in the book, I Exaggerate, My Brushes with Fame with Kevin Nealon. And is the story with Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Where he would continue to pat you on the ass in the phone.
Yeah.
Okay. So while we do that, I need you to tell that story with your voice. Because here's the thing. Your voice is so good that I read your entire book in your voice. Like I heard you reading.
Can you do my voice?
I'm barely able to talk myself. Hip it, hip it, hip it.
I don't hear many people doing impressions of me. Although.
You do impressions though.
David Duchovny did an impression of me.
Big deal.
And he would go like this. Here's his impression of me.
Okay.
Hey man. Hey man.
That's it.
Hey man.
So sweet.
Peyton Manning,
before we do this, because then we're going to wrap it up and get you back to the West Side where
Not quite the West Side.
Wait, you live.
I live at 302 Wilbury Street in Brentwood.
Your zip code is?
And the zip code is 90277.
And the house color is? Your wife is home now?
White.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you drove through a monsoon to get here. The Golden Globes are today. I can't thank you enough. I don't even know. Like, I can't thank you enough for being here.
How do you know you can't? You've already thanked me enough.
By thanking you, I'm going to have you do a little project with me.
Okay.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. This is what I do at the end of my podcast. I do it with everybody. So this is, I do this for, because this is one, just how I draw. Everybody can do it. It's a lot of fun. And it's just a fun little intimate thing to do. Okay. So what we do is while you tell a story about Peyton Manning patting your ass, which was a fantastic story that I can't wait to hear, we're going to draw. So what is a no-look drawing, how I drew you in this portrait, okay. Right? Is so you can look down at the canvas one time.
One time.
Just one time. And so, but you go off, when I draw you, I'm going to look, I'm just going to stare at you like a creep. And I'm just going to stare at you.
I like the
and
attention.
I'm going to draw you how I, like how I perceive you to be, like, okay. In just through feeling what you, and again, like I said, in your portrait, you have four eyes. It doesn't matter. Like, and you're going to do the same to me.
Yeah. The more off kilter it is, the better, right?
The better. So you get it.
Oh boy, do I ever.
You get it. So you can pick any color. You can do red. But pick any color you
whatever
want.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you want.
I'm
going to
pick one without looking.
Yeah, yeah, pick one without looking. Just to keep it in on the end.
Yes, blue.
Okay, so while you're telling, okay. Because like I have a lot of favorite Kevin Nealon stories. I have stories that I want to know about SNL. I mean, like you were on there for 9 seasons. You got there. I mean, the story of how Kevin got on Saturday Night Live is phenomenal. Have you ever, did you ever listen to the book or read the book? Oh my God. It's all Green Light by, who's a Southern actor?
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, don't tell him I didn't know his name. So did you ever read or listen to that book? Okay, so the whole idea of his book is like how, you know, how many green lights he's gotten. And he's got so many fucking green lights. Like, you're waiting as a listener of like, did you get any red lights? Were there any red lights? Did you have any, even a yellow light?
You're talking about the approval of a project to go do it, right?
No.
The green
just
light?
Green light was his whole story of how he became Matthew McConaughey. And right. How things just kind of unfolded for him. And
everything was easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if that's your story, but, like, I've
gotten yellow lights.
You've gotten a few yellow lights?
Yeah.
Did you ever get a red light, Kevin? Was there ever a red
right
light?
Right here in this building.
At the Comedy Store, because yeah. You didn't get past.
Mm-mm. That was my red light. I got a lot of red lights.
That. Yeah.
I had a lot of, all these auditions.
Yeah.
I went for an audition.
I'm going to start drawing you.
Went for an audition once when I first moved out here. I was 26, and I had 5 callbacks.
Yeah.
And after the last callback, they looked at each other, the two producers. They said, "We're not getting any closer than this." And I walked out of there thinking, "Yes, green light." And I waited a week, didn't hear back. 2 weeks, didn't hear back. Finally, they said, thank you, but we've decided that we're going with an older person. We're going to start looking at older people for the role. And it was for Sam Malone on Cheers, the bartender.
You auditioned for Sam Malone on Cheers?
Yeah, yeah. I've come. I got a red light on The Office.
Who were you going to be on The Office?
Steve Carell.
Damn it, what a good show.
That was close, though.
You would have killed it. Yeah.
And but you know what I did get green lighted on?
This Your podcast.
Show. Yeah.
Yep. So... Tell the others. Huh? Tell the others.
I will.
Tell the other famous people what they've been missing out on.
You guys have to do this podcast. Sarah, let me tell you something about Sarah Rose. I just met her, but I followed her for a long time on Instagram and TikTok and Joe Coy, whatever else is out there. And she's creative. She's talented. She's heartfelt. She enjoys what she does. She puts a lot of work into her podcast. Don't just do anybody's podcast where they Wikipedia you. Do somebody's where they'll read your book and they'll remember what they read and they worship you.
I kind of do. Is that okay? Is that creepy?
Yeah, you're my first one. I'm going to start a...
I don't think people should downplay what you've done. That's what it's like. I don't think anybody, your work is, that's what I mean. It's like, you're not dead. You can't be a legend, but like you.
But it's true. People say I'm a legend, but I say, don't you have to be dead?
You're not.
Can you be legendary if you're alive still?
Yes.
Yes, you can be legendary, but not a legend.
Absolutely. I mean, like, all I'm saying is I have so much respect. I have so much respect out of the life, the blood, sweat, and tears that has gone into the stories, not just illustration.
It did take a long time.
Yes, and you had an art opening as well, right?
That's right. I have a gallery showing right now.
Where is the gallery?
It's at the Choice Contemporary in Brentwood on Barrington. And the February 2nd is the closing event of my run there.
Which I'm coming to, whether you
really
want me to or not. Absolutely. I wasn't able to come to the opening because I noticed. In Louisville with some family stuff. But
Louisville, that's where I went.
You did?
Yeah, there's a club there too.
Yeah, which one?
Whatever the club is.
Okay,
there's
only one. Yeah. There's one club there. It's changed like three times. It was called the Laughing Derby, the Comedy Caravan. It's a little hole in the wall.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I did your photo. Did your picture.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. That's how long it takes. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Is that a cigar I have in my mouth?
It might, Kevin, I think that's your nose, maybe.
My nipple?
It might be a safety pin through your lip by the looks of it. Actually, it's not so bad. The eyes are actually kind of almost correct.
Yeah, they are. I like that. I like that. Mean,
so there's that, Kevin. And so what happens with these is that, so we will, at the end of whenever this is, not the podcast, but when we come to the conclusion of it, you'll do yours, you'll sign it. And then we're going to have bid. People can bid on it. And the money that comes from that, however, bids.
Goes to me?
There'll be a minimum. Goes for your gas money on the way over here. We'll go to a charity, anywhere you want to donate money. Oh, so it's kind of like, you know, I feel like everything should kind of have a good purpose, a good use to it, rather than people just jerking off on microphones on podcasts, which is fine. That's just what we've been doing. But I think there should be, you know what I mean? There's people need help. People need a lot of help. And so I think if there's anything that we could do, just the smallest thing, we should probably do it.
It will be the smallest thing.
It might, yeah. We won't. There'll be a minimum of bids. It's Kevin Nealon who has a show. So anyway, so while you do that, and then we'll get you out of here. Will you... Do you mind telling the story of Peyton Manning?
Yeah, so I went
because
to the...
Oh, you have to do your drawing. You got to draw me now.
So I went to the without looking, right?
Without looking. You can look once to get your bearings.
Okay.
But then you just do it.
Okay. So I went to the 40th...
You draw on your arm, your forearm.
I went to the 40th reunion of SNL.
Yeah.
And everybody was there. I mean, it was David Bowie and all kinds of people. And... I see Peyton Manning there, and I don't know him. I'm not a Broncos fan or anything, but I know who he is. So I go over and chat with him for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We were just a couple of athletes chatting. That's all we were. And after 10 minutes, I said to him, "Mind if we get a picture?" He was, "Sure, no problem." So I hand my phone to Norm MacDonald, and he takes our picture. And as he's handing it back to me, Peyton Manning grabs my phone. And gives it to his brother, Eli. He goes, "Eli, take a look at that picture, see if it's okay." He goes, "Yeah, it looks good." Hands it back to me. They leave. 10 minutes later, I go to text somebody. And my phone is all in Chinese font. And I don't know how, I can't work anything. All I know is how to hold it. That's it.
Yeah.
And nobody knew how to fix it. I thought, how did this happen? I don't even know how this happened. The Peyton Manning brothers. Oh, man, I was so angry. You know how I get.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into that ballroom. I saw him because he's tall. I'm tall. He goes, "Nealon, how's your phone?" I ran over to him. I said, "I hate you, man. I hate the Broncos. I hate football helmets, balls. I hate all that stuff. Fix my phone." He goes, "You got to bring it to Eli. He's the one that did it." So I took off. He patted me on the ass as I was taking off because that's what they do.
Yeah.
And I ran a square out pattern with a little loop over to Eli. Mm. I said, "You got to fix this phone, man. I hate you. I hate the Giants." But he fixed it for me. On the bright side, I got 10 new followers from Beijing.
It's my favorite story.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Are you okay?
Thank you.
Well, so that's what preluded is the patting of the ass. And so while we finish up, so Kevin, there's that story. There's so many stories. There's Prince in here. There's Howard Stern in here. There's Christopher Walken, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I like the Christopher Walken one.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
I don't
one.
Think he likes it, though.
Can we? Why not?
I don't know.
Look at that photo of Christopher. You know what, Kevin? That might be the best drawing that you have to sign it, Kevin. You got to sign it. That might be the best drawing I've ever seen.
You got to get around more.
Do I, though? Because, and lastly, you know what? I was listening to your
harp.
Your harpsichord, your show. You were on the Whitney Cummings podcast, and you were, I think, right? And you were talking about the Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
So he was the last one that I read in your book on the way over here because I really wanted to finish it. And by the way, yeah, there's so many things in this book I talk about. But before we go, so the Anthony Bourdain, you never met Anthony Bourdain.
No.
Is that correct? But what was, you had, was there was something like super racy that you did. Was there a joke that you did about Anthony Bourdain?
In the book?
Well, it's not in the, I read the whole part. It's not in the book.
No.
So that I listened to the podcast and I was like, what's with the Anthony Bourdain? Because I did a drawing of Anthony Bourdain when he passed, right? Oh. I didn't know much about him either. So I read your stuff and how your attitude towards him changed. But I was, but listening to you on Whitney's podcast, I was like, well, what was it? Because you guys never said the joke.
Oh.
Like, what was the polarizing joke of Anthony Bourdain?
Well, you could edit this show, right?
Sure thing. Okay. Not. Nope.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, and then I'll tell you why I'm uncomfortable sometimes doing it. Although, I'm not opposed to doing it.
Yeah.
I'll do it sometimes in my stand-up.
Yeah.
So everybody loves Anthony Bourdain. They loved him.
Yeah.
They loved his show. They loved him. And I never saw his show.
Yeah.
And I didn't know him.
Yeah.
But I developed a dislike for him because they played his commercials so often, like ad nauseum. And he was always coming on, you know, Anthony Bourdain eating clams in Morocco, things like that, mm-hmm. you know. I said, I don't care. And he had the cigar, you know, the rolled up sleeves. And I thought he was kind of cocky and arrogant.
Yeah.
And kind of full of himself. And I wasn't on the Bourdain train. But then when he killed himself, I realized that he didn't like himself either. So in a way that kind of made me like him. I thought we have something in common.
Yeah.
You know, we could both hang out together and watch his show and not like him at the same time, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't dislike him as much as he disliked himself. I didn't want to kill him.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to watch his show. But now I watch his show all the time. I love it. I love that show. I hope it gets renewed. I hope it gets renewed. So I feel always awkward doing that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sensitive to people that had family members that maybe committed suicide.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me is, do I want to get the laugh or do I want to be sensitive to these people? And usually I get the laugh. I want to get the laugh.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's in, you're living in a world now where everything is so sensitized and, you know, you really have to think about things before you say them. And I do think it affects comedy. Like I do a bit, I was talking about me playing Tithead in Little Nicky, an Adam Sandler film. And I had two breasts on my head.
Of course. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was telling the story on stage about that, how the makeup department was amazing.
Yeah.
They had, you know, they molded it to my head and they put water balloons in there and they jiggled and they felt just like real breasts, I would imagine. And and everybody wanted to feel my breasts throughout the day. I mean, it was like a line. I would be talking to them and a lot of times I have to say, excuse me, my eyes are down here. My eyes are down here. And then when they took them off at the end of the day, it's like nobody cared about me. I was like invisible.
Yeah.
And so just the other night in Colorado, I did that. And this guy comes up to me, I was signing books. He comes up, he goes, I'm just, I don't know, just food for thought. My girlfriend had breast cancer and she had a mastectomy. So that bit was really hard for her to hear, you know? And yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. You know, just I said, yeah, you know, I know a couple of people that have mastectomies too. It's not good. It's not, you know, what am I going to say? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, do I stop? I stop doing it because people are too sensitive about that? Or, and I never even thought about that before. You know, or people won't, you know, people don't even recognize me now because I don't have breasts. I get that though. I get that. I used to do like I told you, that sketch. And on the piece of paper, then the newsprint paper. And one night I did it and it's at the same casino as I did the Pointer Sisters. That's a bad luck place for me. But he comes up to me, this little guy with the thing rolled up, and he goes, hey. I said, hey, man, I just want to let you know that you ruined my whole evening and my wife's evening. It's her birthday. I said, by doing this and getting charcoal. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, man. Looked like she was having a good time. No, she wasn't. I said, well, where is she now? She goes in the bathroom, getting all that shit off her face. I said, I'm sorry. And then she came out. And I talked to them for like 20 minutes, and they left going, hey, man, great meeting you, man. And, yeah, don't worry about the thing, you know.
Yeah.
Another time these two guys came out, because I mentioned, like, I used to do the story where people would fill in the end of the sentence, you know. And this, somebody threw out the word Vietnam. So I went with that for a while, talking, you know, just making up a story about it. And these two guys came up to me. They're Vietnam vets. They go, hey, you know, what you said up there was really insensitive, man. We were both in Nam. And,
oh, boy.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't, you know. See, that's the thing with comedy, though. You're always going to offend somebody. And I'm like, I think I'm a really nice guy, and I don't try to offend anybody. My act isn't that edgy or anything.
Yeah.
But there'll always be somebody that you will offend for something.
Yeah.
So you got to have really kind of tough skin for that and many other reasons.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I did hear you. That's been a hot, I feel like a hot topic for stand-ups for past... at least couple of years or so of like this kind of crowds.
You can't say what you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And how, like, you know, kind of how you adjust yourself as a comic or don't, or take feedback or don't, or keep plowing through, even though, you know, you think the tit joke is hilarious. Right. But it's always, but yeah. So I think, I don't know. That's what I was kind of wondering, of like kind of how the climate is now with audiences. And that's what I mean. Do you change? Like, if you go in and you know, read a room as being one way and your comedy is the other way, like, would you adjust it? Like, I think that's the thing of like, do you stay on the rails of like what you believe in and what you, or do you take it and kind of adjust it accordingly? But I think that's always kind of my interest as an artist as well.
Right.
My wife
right,
is literally
right. I mean,
but I did. So I've, you know, I, Whitney was talking about it before. And because at the end of the day, like as comics, as entertainers, people, I think, they just want to laugh.
Yeah.
And whatever you got to do as a comic or as an artist to make that happen, that's your work.
They want to laugh. They want to get laughs and they want to be liked.
Yeah.
When I was working the other day, I just realized that like halfway through my act, I just said to the audience, like me, please like me.
Did you say that out loud?
Yeah, like me. That's all I want. I just realized that. I want you to like me. But maybe that's why we do stand up. But, you know, you talk about people changing their act and stuff and reading the crowd. That's one of the reasons I admire Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, he just stays the course, does what he does, you know?
Yeah. Who's also in your book.
He is, yeah.
And you said that he changed from what he was to after he kind of took the hiatus.
Well, we all change. And I think that hiatus, you know, him leaving that show and going to Africa or wherever he went was, you know, more of a, you know, a energetic booster for him. It sped things along a little bit. But when we all start off, we're all different. Like I did stand up with him at the Largo when it was on Fairfax across from Canner's. And I don't know how old he was, but he's kind of skinny, scrawny kid, you know, wore that cap like taxi cab drivers wear. And he always had the army jacket on with his hands in the pocket. And he would talk down, you know, would talk down at the floor. And then the punchline, he'd look up, deliver his punchline, and go back down again, hands in the pocket.
Yeah.
To now when he works, you know, with a muscle t-shirt on and shaved head and I think he had a cigarette back then too. He used to hold, but yeah, he certainly evolved into what he's doing now. And I think sometimes I think I'll see somebody like that and I'll think, I got to be more like that. I got something to say, you know, about current things and you know, kind of edgy. And then I'll see someone like Tig and I'll think, I got to be more like that, man. I got to be a little more laid back and just be myself. You know what I mean? It's just like, be happy with what you got, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I 100% relate to all of that as well.
Sometimes I say, I want to be more like Sarah Rose.
Yeah.
You know, I want to just draw with my eyes closed. I want to do everything with my eyes closed. Because that's really where it comes from.
It's a good way to be, man. It's a good way to be. Yeah, just close your eyes and hope nobody sees you. It works out really, really well.
There are some comics that do their act like with their back to the audience.
Well, like that's
Mitch Hedberg used to do that.
Yeah, listen, man. If I could do stand-up facing the wall the entire time. I even said that the other day at a show. Of like, I wish I could do it like the Blair Witch Project. Just stay in the corner the entire time. And when I turn around at the end of my act, you guys all kill me. Wouldn't that be fun? Anyone? Okay.
But, you know, if you're going to face the wall, you got to be able to connect with the wall. You know what I mean? You really got to get that connection. It's not just staring. You got to really look at the wall and connect with it. You know what I'm saying?
Like it's a person. I'm going to do that when I get home, Kevin. Just stare at the wall and then bang my head into it and then see how it goes.
You are self-deprecating.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah, yeah.
You're
that'll
not
be
a cutter,
my self-portrait. I am not. You know what? I've never been a cutter. I was a drinker. I was an eating disorderer.
You were?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which way? Heavy or thin?
Thin. Anorexic or? I got really thin.
You did.
Man. I did. I can laugh about it.
But you got therapy.
Through it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I don't. That was a long time ago. That was literally almost 20 years ago. Like, so it's, we're past, you know what I mean? You can kind of talk about it and laugh about it. So I am self-deprecating, but it's going to get better for me.
Well, that's, you have what? To use that, right? You have to use that.
I, you know what's funny, Kevin, is that I need to get to that point. I haven't gotten comfortable enough with myself to do that. Like what you're talking about, like.
I'm like, you know, you're so right. I'm like, I've been there for a while where I'm so dead inside, where I'm willing to try anything. Just, like sometimes I'll just stand on stage for like, minute, 30 minutes, that's 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'll tell the audience, I said, don't worry about me. I like quiet time. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm just dead inside.
Yeah.
So enjoy the quiet time. I know what I'm doing. You know, that kind of thing.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. Yeah.
Just, let's just rest and think about what's been going on here today. Yeah.
I feel like though you could do that. You could. You're at a point where I think artists get to a point in their career like that they could do anything. Like if there's a James Taylor came up on stage and was like, "Happy birthday to you," everybody'd be like, "Fuck yeah, James Taylor, fuck yeah!" But if he's an open micer, he'd be like, "Oh shit, fuck yourself," you know, and people throwing cans at their head.
Yeah,
just depends. So anyway, I won't. We'll wrap it up. I don't want to keep you any longer than you need to be. So
I was just gonna say though, before you wrap it up,
yeah,
when you're doing stand up, and a lot of times you do the same act over and over again.
Yeah,
I always look for something that would inspire me to maybe stumble onto something else that could be a really magical bit.
Yeah.
And that's when every time you go on stage, you're kind of looking for that. You're staying open to that and present.
The magic bit.
The magic, something that will just come to you and you run with it and it'll be like your big new bit.
Can I say something though?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but that's, here's the thing. That's been my problem is I love being in the magic bit. I like improvising. I like being in the moment.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, that's
which
great.
Is that's where the that's,
well, that's ballsy.
Well, that's where the magic is, though.
That is the magic,
right? But when I try, this is what it all comes back down to. When I'm trying to be funny, or I'm trying to make a perfect portrait of Kevin Nealon, that's where it gets unfunny and unfun. So that's my problem. Is like, oh, I love stand up, but I like the, and that's where you get the biggest laughs because you're present, you're in the moment, and people are with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my journey. That's my journey is how to make
a journey. Everybody's got their own journey. And it's just like, you know, they say this 10,000 hour thing or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get good until you've done it for 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from. It's that journey of just getting there and, you know, maybe 9,000 hours is all you need.
Speaking of journeys, again, Kevin Nealon, if you go through and you get his book, I exaggerate, he actually does go through the journeys of even his, how he gets to the sketches.
It's kind of a memoir, actually, now I look back on it. I didn't write it as a memoir, but it kind of became like a memoir.
Well, that's what also makes this book great and super readable. I'm not even a reader, Kevin. What makes it readable is because, like for instance, okay, Lorne Michaels, right?
Is that?
That's
not even the finished one. That's the evolution.
No, that's your process.
Yeah.
That's the journey. That's the journey.
Part of the journey.
But that's what I mean. He started with a square face, ended up kind of with a bigger jaw and a squeezed in head. You know what I think? And how it actually ended.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so as far as in the why I recommend the book, because I have no attention span, and it's these little stories of Kevin's, your relationship with these.
Whatever the painting is, it's like an accompanying anecdote.
Yeah.
Next to it.
I mean, Andy Kaufman, also a journey.
Yeah.
A color journey, a journey. I can't even handle you. I'm so excited about you. I really am. I'm so excited. Very rarely see people put themselves out there and like, hey, this is where I started. This is the process. This is what you see a lot of people with the gloss and that's how they ended. And a lot of people, I think, need to see, you know.
Well, you know what? You've been telling me about everything I do.
Yeah. Are you going to put it podcast? Back on me?
No, but I'm going to tell you why I do everything I do.
Good. Okay.
And it's
good.
Really pretty basic.
Yeah.
When I turned 60.
Yes.
I realized that rehearsals were over.
Okay.
And I'm not going to talk about things anymore that I'm going to do. I'm going to do them.
Yeah.
Because the clock is ticking. Let's be honest. And I started doing that. I did things that would frighten me, like doing the Howard Stern show.
So good.
Doing Real Time with Bill Maher. Things that I felt out of my comfort zone doing. And I did them. And it was the most exhilarating thing I could do, and successful. And I wanted to learn Spanish. I started taking Spanish. I take it twice a week. The piano, I started playing the piano, taking lessons. Drawing, really kind of flushing out these doodles that I did all my life, but never really took seriously.
So is this like a recent thing? Like, is this like...
Yeah.
That's holy,
like right before the pandemic.
You did all of that, this right before the pandemic?
About a year before, yeah.
Okay, first off, what was just said, because she doesn't have a microphone, is Kevin, why am I speaking where you're in the third person? You're right here. That you went, speaking, this is life. Like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
If you want to do it and be passionate about it.
Stop talking about it and do it.
Yeah. You know what? I was on Punk'd once, and I'll never forget this. Ashton Kutcher, I remember. I auditioned for him, and I remember him telling me this right before we did our sketches. And he said, listen, all of you, whatever you're going to do, however you're going to take this, do it passionately. Do it. I don't care if you don't like, do it passionately, because people will watch you, because it's interesting. If people like watching passionate people. And I never forgot that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't agree with that, but
okay.
In the book, you'll see that.
He's not doing well anyway, Ashton. So.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm just joking. Yeah.
No,
it's I'm
true,
kidding.
Man. If you, you have to make a choice, a decision of what you want to do, and then just put everything into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And I'm still, you know, I've always believed in continued education, and I'm looking for more things to do. I'm looking, you know, on my hiking thing, I fly a drone and I have a GoPro on a selfie stick. I never knew how to fly a drone or work a GoPro or edit on Premiere Pro.
You do all of that.
And so I do all of that now.
Amazing.
And I love it. And I'm thinking, what else can I do? What else? And then I have to make sure that I leave time to spend with my family too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, which is noble, because a lot of people don't do that. But so that's if there's anything, you've taught me a lot, and now I feel like I'm a lazy person, but I do have to go out and learn a language. I tried learning French, and it didn't go well. I just quit.
Why do I feel like your father all of a sudden?
You actually are very similar to him, not to feel, but my dad's also 6'4".
I get that a lot. I'll do a show and some like pretty girl will come up. I go, oh, here we go. She goes, you remind me of my dad.
Oh, only because you're wearing hiking boots, jeans, a hat, and you're 6'4". That's and you laugh at some of my stuff. That's probably not that funny, but you do it because you have unconditional love for me.
Your whole package is great. The whole persona of her. It's very vulnerable and honest and authentic and funny.
So are you. That's what I'm. That's why I can't. Like, what's wrong with you? Nothing's wrong with you. And that's all.
That's not true for anybody.
Well, you have ADD something. And you like sugar. Okay. All right. I'll give you that. But listen, can I just say, if there's anything I could leave anybody with this podcast, please be like Kevin Nealon. Like, if there's something you want. If there's something you want to do, do it, because by doing it, you are such an inspiration to other people. This book, like, you know, I would love to put out a book. I will eventually, but I can't do that if I don't have the example before me. And so that's all I'm saying. By taking that attitude, whether it's you're 60 or 16 or 74, like my dad, who's kind of on that path of like, let's do it. This is the last quarter. Let's fucking do it. He's a basketball player, so everything's a quarter. So
let's get out there and do it, man.
Yeah.
Stop pussyfooting around. Let's get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Where's get out, Dad?
Yeah.
I don't know, outside the house.
The driveway. I'm going to fix the VCR. Yeah. But it doesn't, but you have to surround yourself with people who are, you know, enthusiastic about life and about trying things.
And that's why I like to go out to these clubs, by the way, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
Is because I like to stay engaged.
Yeah.
With people.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing now? What's a 25-year-old doing, or a 30-year-old or a 45-year-old? You know, what am I? I don't want to be stuck in my own little world. I want to get out there and mingle with people and talk to them and watch what they're doing.
Yeah.
And not necessarily change myself for that, but just to know what's going on.
Yeah. And then we'll wrap this up. Right now, I wouldn't say favorite because I don't want to do that. But like, when you think of someone that you're like, damn, like that's kind of where I want to be now, like currently, comedian wise, stand up wise, that you're inspired by.
There's so many of them. But, you know, also, I don't tend to watch a lot of comics anymore because I find myself analyzing too much.
Yeah.
But
I can give you mine first.
I like. You know, again, these are just a few. There's a lot I like, but just coming to the top of my head right now is, you know, Tig and Dave Chappelle and Sarah Silverman.
Smart. Mine's Maria Bamford.
Maria's great.
God,
she's great too.
Amazing.
She's so unique.
She's jazz.
She's not going to go on stage and worry about the person on before her being the same kind of, you know.
Yeah. She's just a comic that, like, if I know she's performing, I will 100% make the sprint towards the room.
That's what I tell people, young comics, they ask me for advice. I say, just be original. Mm-hmm. Write as much as you can. Be original and unique, because there's a lot of comics out there now doing all the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's okay, too, as long as the same stuff you're doing is better than their stuff.
Which is hard. It's hard to be original. I think more and more and more. Like, my wife, Jen, doesn't even like going to stand-up shows. She'll tell you, because she thinks everybody's the same. She's like, what's different? As somebody who's not a comedian or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, some comedians are the same, but they're really good at what they're good technicians with their act.
Yeah.
You know, good joke writing craftsmanship.
Yeah.
But I remember people, you know, like Sebastian is different.
Oh, so good.
You know, Bill Burr is a good venter. You know, he likes to vent. And that's fun. That's fun to watch. So those people are kind of different. Andy Kaufman, that's why I liked him so much, because he was just so unique and different. And Steve Martin, they weren't your typical stand-ups.
Yeah.
And that's what really interests me. So Steve Martin, Albert Brooks, and Andy Kaufman were my influences.
Damn. I know, I heard you worked at the Improv when Andy Kaufman was going on stage there.
Yeah.
And you guys talked about transcendental meditation.
You have got
that was
memory.
His favorite subject.
You don't have ADD.
Everything. Once I'm interested in something, I do remember everything. It's textures, it's stories. You're an Irish dude. Like, you tell stories. Like, if I can remember stories because it's your life, I'm interested. But it's like jokes, if you had jokes, I probably wouldn't remember them. But if you have life stories, which is in the book, I Exaggerate My Brushes with Fame, Kevin Nealon, if you don't get it, we cannot be friends. But that's, you know, so that's what's interesting to me, is that, like, it's not just, you know, your outside view on a celebrity. It's just your experience. I like that. But it was interesting reading about Andy Kaufman and him talking. But it's like him. He talked to you for half an hour about TM, Transcendental Meditation, because he's interested in it. And you're like, I like your
voice. And I know that that is the way you get somebody to talk, is ask them about something that interests them.
Yes.
Or have them talk about themselves.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And somebody told me their father was a salesman. And the father said to the son, you know how you get people to like you and really like you and talk about you is ask them about themselves and then just keep saying interesting a lot. Interesting. Fascinating. That's fascinating.
It's true. People even like hearing their own name. That's why I said your name, Kevin, 7,501 times.
Trying to get to 10,000 because then you'll really say it good. Well.
Kevin. Yeah. Kevin, so you're going on your stand-up tour. So where can people see you? Where do they find you?
Well, they can find me on my website, kevinnealon.com, and that's the list of my touring gigs, and there's plenty, plenty for everyone. When is this coming on?
Next Monday. Next Monday.
Okay, well, I was just in Salt Lake City. I'll be in San Jose, and I will be in San Diego in a couple weeks.
Ooh, we should go see him. I'm going to come see you in San Diego.
Will you?
Yeah. Where? Do the comedy trip. Comedy store?
American Comedy Club.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that club. Never been, but I will. We'll go. When is it?
I think the 18th, around there. 18th.
February 18th?
No, January.
January. Are you this month? I'm an idiot. Yeah. We're coming.
Is that true, Jen?
I'm coming to your show. I'm driving down.
You should take the train. I always love taking the train.
I've never taken the train.
It's the best.
Can you believe that?
I think part of the track is closed now from LA to like San Clemente, but once it's up, I think it's called the Surf Rider. It goes along the beach and you see people out there and they're swimming and coming up by the pier and you see traffic backed up on the freeway and you're like, yeah, this is the way to do it.
Not me, motherfucker. Yeah.
No.
If I take the train, can you write a story about it in your book?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. You guys, I'm going to come see you. I really am. If you guys meet me there in San Diego at American Comedy Club to see Kevin Nealon, January.
February.
February.
No, January. You're right.
Actually, it's in March of 2024. We'll see you guys there. If I can leave with anything, I'm going to say it again. Get his book. I cannot tell you enough. If you're in LA, go see his show. I'm floored by you. Kurt Cobain is in here. Steve Martin, Johnny Carson. You learn a lot about life, not just stand up and art, and check out his art. If you don't know Kevin Nealon does art, you're missing out. So please go check him out. I love you.
Thank you. And my art is at Kevin Nealon Art.
Oh yeah, have your Instagram. That's the website,
Kevin Nealon Art.
Yeah, and what about .com. Instagram?
Instagram is Kevin Nealon Artwork.
Go check it out.
And I do photos too.
You just started did you just start doing photography?
No. I've been doing it
for a long time.
Mostly my wife. I take photos of her.
You just posted
it's called
amazing
Grit and Glamour
photo.
Yeah. It's her like glamour against the grit black background.
Yeah.
So you can see that on Instagram, Susan's Photo Sessions.
Susan's Photo Sessions. Also, you have a highlight of all of your photography work on your Instagram page.
Yeah, that's it.
Like filtered work and stuff where you've been. I love photography. My wife is a photographer. I know you guys have spoken.
She's really good.
I love photography. Check it out. I can't wait to see what you do next. And maybe next time we'll do this podcast in Spanish.
Hola.
Merci. I'm just joking. Buena vista.
Buena vista.
Okay, you're canceled. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Love
Rose.
You, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin Nealon.